Just listening to the words of that last song, I mean, when you this whole book of 1 and 2 Samuel, I mean, there's events in here that, and we're going to look at some of these today, that are, it's kind of like, why would God record some of these events? You know, telling Saul to go look for donkeys, you know, and why would they pick, you know, when you see the results of the story, it's like, why would God pick Saul to be the first king? And I think that when you back up from this, and we were kind of talking about this last night, there's a really what these stories tell us, what these events tell us is about God's faithfulness, about his interaction in the world, about how he, you know, it's like, when you work for architects care a lot about their creations, you know. Don't you think God cares about his? And that he's involved in the affairs of men? And that's what these stories are about. And I think as we really step back from this, the things we're going to look at today are about Saul. But it's really about the faithfulness of God. And in the midst of what appears to be a bad choice, okay? Anyway, as I started thinking through this, I wrote myself a note on the top. I said, what do we want to see in a king? And this is not a rhetorical question. It would be good to, if I could get some input. And we don't have a king. Well, some people think we do. But, I mean, we don't generally, we don't have a king. But what do we want in a president? If you were going to, if we're going to elect a president, what are some things we'd like to see in him? What? Honesty would be a good one. Being a believer would be a really good one. You know, we've had those. Strong. I mean, a guy. Well, that brings up, does he have to be a guy? You know, we've had, yes. Yeah, I mean, some people think yes. I mean, there were queens in Israel. Right. I mean, they're so, and I started as I kind of wrote two different categories. I said, as the world thinks about it, you know, we kind of want him to be smart. You know, I don't know what that is. I mean, I want him to be smarter than me. When we read this story, do we want him to be good looking? Yes, we do. Yeah, sorry. yeah, yeah. And we want him experienced. You know, that would have been good if he was experienced. Strong, I wrote strong, male or female. I mean, when I started writing it down, our head goes, you know, these are kind of attributes of men. But, you know, I mean, Condoleezza Rice, would you vote for her for president? We have strong opinions, too. But, but I mean, there's, who would, you know, money? Does he have to have money? No. And then, compassionate. Wow. And I wrote, what God looks at, you know, we want him to, and when we look at this story, we kind of want him to be brave. I wrote honest. Quiet. Is he, you know, after watching some of the debates, I kind of wanted one of them to just sit down and be quiet. Really? I mean, just... a servant, godly, faithful, believer, humble, and as we go through this, and we're going to see that what's about to happen to Saul. There's a change in the life of Saul, and as we get into this, you're going to see the same thing happen to David. There's a change in his heart, and we'll get into that later in the book. We talked about this last night. We were watching it was some sort of panel discussion, and the guy was speaking was the head of the Israeli Mossad, which is their secret police for, I don't know how long ago he was, but he was talking about Israel and Syria and the whole Iran thing, and, you know, are we going to bomb them, and blah, blah, blah. The interesting, we were just kind of, I was half listening, and he started talking about the king of Jordan. And he said, you know, sometimes I think it would be better if we had a king. And I was like, as an Israeli saying, maybe it would be better if we had a king. And I thought, you will, and you have one. Just you don't recognize him yet. I mean, that I just thought when he said that, anyway, so what we're going to look at, and I'm not going to read all of this, but I'm going to depend on you to, if you haven't read it already, go home and read chapters 9, 10, and 11, because I'm not going to be able, there's a lot of verses in here, and I'm not going to be able to go through them all. But chapter 9 is really how the original, the first transition from Samuel to Saul, how he was chosen really by God, okay? Chapter 10 is when Saul is confirmed by Samuel and made king. And then chapter 11 is about Saul's first victory. So we're going to, and I'm not going to read every verse, but so when you go home, read it. Because there's some really kind of, I don't want this to sound wrong, but odd stories about the donkey and donkeys going to look, anyway. I think the idea behind these chapters is that Saul really had a humble start. In the beginning, and it's mentioned 3 or 4 times in these chapters, that Saul had humility. Now, if you were to stop and ask anybody, did Saul end up with humility? No. Something happened. But in the beginning, Saul had a humble start and a humble heart. Something got to him. But in the beginning, he was humble. And what's the guy that wrote the Living Bible or translation? Eugene Peterson. And I think he wrote a book, and the title of the book was A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. That was kind of the problem that Saul had. He didn't have that long obedience in the same direction, that he started out humbly. So let me read turn to chapter 9. And of 1 Samuel, I'm going to read verses 1 and 2. I'm going to mess up. I should let somebody read these that can pronounce these words. Now there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zoror, the son of Bechorath, the son of, how do you spell it? Ephaniah, the son of a Benjamite. A mighty man of valor. So there was this guy. And he had a son whose name was Saul, a choice and handsome man. And there was not a more handsome person than he among the sons of Israel. From his shoulders and up, he was taller than any of the people. So there's so much in this, in just these two verses. So it says that Saul was the son of this, son of Kish, and he was a Benjamite, and we're going to find out later he was from Gibeah. Now, and it says he was good-looking, and he was tall, and he was handsome, okay? When Israel read this, he was a Benjamite, and later on we're going to find out he was from Gibeah. If you go back to Judges, the last story of the book of Judges, remember the story where the guys go in and say, you know, we want to have these guys, and we want to sleep with them? And the guy says, no, you don't do that. You can sleep with my concubine and my daughter. You can have them. They take the concubine and the daughter, and it's a horrible story. They ravage them. They find the concubine dead in the morning, and they chop her up and send her out throughout all of Israel. I mean, it's a horrible story. And it causes a civil war between the Benjamites and the rest of Israel. When they're saying, here's a Benjamite from Gibeah, this is not good. They don't have good memories of, this would be like saying, you know, he's a descendant of the people that got killed that overtook the Alamo. You know, I mean, this was an event that in the nation of Israel that was memorable. It's kind of interesting, at the end of this book, at the end of this story, Saul actually chops up some cattle and sends them around Israel, sends the pieces out in Israel and says, unless you enlist in the army, you're going to become like these pieces of animal. And it kind of, you know, I'm thinking you probably get a lot of enlistees if you did that. But so there, when the writer of Samuel is introducing this. This isn't like a big, this is a, he's a Benjamite. And it's kind of like, can anything good come out of Gibeah? Sound familiar? Can anything good come out of Galilee? These were people that they didn't, there were not fond memories of the Benjamites from Gibeah. So they introduce Saul, and then in verses 3 through 10, there's this whole story. Let me read part of this. Hopefully I don't end up reading it all, but because it'll take some time. It says, now the donkeys of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. So Kish said to his son Saul, take now with you one of the servants and arise and search for the donkeys. And he passed through the hill country of Ephraim and passed through the land of Shalisha, but they did not find them. And they passed through. So it talks about all these places they were looking for the donkeys. There's several interesting things in here. I mean, most people don't think Saul was this little kid because it says he was tall and handsome and was head and shoulders over everybody else in Israel. So he was an adult. And there's this sense that his dad comes to him and says, man, I need you to go find the donkeys. Well, an adult son might go, send your servants. You know, he was an obedient son. The interesting thing about donkeys is donkeys were for royalty. I mean, these were kind of things, these were, you know, when I think of donkeys, I'm thinking, you know, a stupid, dumb animal. These were animals that kings rode on. That sound familiar? There's this kind of, genres in the book of Samuel that are kind of looked toward the Messiah. There's all this typology in this book that is really kind of amazing. So they can't find him, and it says in verse 6, it says, then he said to them, behold, there's a man of God in this city, and a man is held in honor, and all that he says surely comes true. Now let us go there. Perhaps he can tell us about our journey on which we have yet set out. So they're like, they hear about Samuel and they say, well, let's go find him. Maybe he can tell us where the donkeys are. So that it's kind of like, and as we walk through life and try to figure out, you know, how God is working in our life, I mean, that's what you're seeing here. It's like they go out to find the donkeys and God sets this up so that Saul runs into Samuel. And that's what happens later on. And it says, the servant answered and said, answered Saul again and said, behold, I have in my hand a fourth. Well, they're going to go to this man, and he says, what do we have to give him? And the servant says, well, I have this to give them. And verse 9, it says, formerly in Israel, when a man went to inquire of God, he used to say, come and let us go to the seer, for he will be called a prophet. Now was formerly called a seer. There's this whole, they became like, I don't want to say like a fortune teller, but that's what they kind of looked at them as. You know, this guy can see the future. So if we go to him and ask him where where our donkeys are, he'll be able to tell us. It said, then Saul said to his servant, well said, come, let us go. So they went to the city where the man of God was. And they go, I won't read all of it, otherwise we'll be here a long time. And then, where's the part? Look at verse 15 and 16. It says, now, a day before Saul's coming, the Lord revealed this to Samuel, saying, about this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin, and you shall anoint him to be prince over my people Israel, and he shall deliver my people from the hand of the Philistines, for I have regarded my people because their cry has come up to me. The day before all this happens, he tells Samuel, the guy that's going to come to you, I'm sending you, sending him to you at this time of day. And he's the one, you see what he called him? I want you to anoint him what? Prince. This is God talking. Who's king? Who's really king? God is king. And he said, you're going to announce him as prince, as my prince, he's eventually called the king, but I mean, in terms of how God looks at him, he's the prince. He works for God, not Israel. He's not, God is the king of Israel. So there's this, and really what you learn in these verses is, this is God's choice. Saul is God's choice for Israel. This isn't like some happenstance. This isn't like, but you know, God puts leaders in power. We may not understand that, but God put our president there. I mean, we got to be really, you know, these are God's choices. Not Saul, not Samuel's, not Saul, and we'll find out later. Because then jump down to verse, let me read 20 and 21. And then, because Saul's talking to Samuel, and he says in verse 20, "And as for your donkeys, which were lost 3 days ago, do not set your mind on them, for they have been found." And this is kind of like Samuel explaining to Saul, "I know what's going on." He never, up to this point, Saul never asked him about the donkeys. Never asked him. And Samuel says to him, "Oh, by the way, I know you're looking for donkeys, and don't worry about them, for they've been found. And as for whom is all that is desirable in Israel, is it not for you and for all your father's household?" And Saul answered and said, "Am I not a Benjamite of the smallest of tribes in Israel, and my family the least of all the families in the tribe of Benjamin? Why then do you speak to me this way? Saul, you're going to be the guy." And this is kind of the first time Saul goes, "Why me? I'm nothing. I'm of the smallest tribe, and we're the smallest family of this tribe. Why would you pick me?" And that's really the kind of this happens again later on where Saul is just surprised. And he shows humility. "This shouldn't be me. Wouldn't it be cool if a candidate would just say, 'I'm scared.' You know, this is, we need a humble person that says, 'I'm going to listen to who God.'" And that's how Saul starts out. I mean, and it's amazing later what happens to Saul. But when you start looking at these verses, he said, "Why would you pick me? This doesn't make sense." Let me read verses at the end of the chapter. "And when they came down to from the high place of the city, Samuel spoke to Saul on the roof. And they arose early, and it came about at daybreak that Samuel called Saul on the roof, saying, 'Get up, that I may send you away.' So Saul arose, and both he and Samuel went onto the street. And as they were going down to the edge of the city, Samuel said to Saul, 'Say to the servant that he might go ahead of us and pass on, but you remain standing now, that I may proclaim the word of God to you.'" Samuel, you're the one. You're the one that God told me to choose. This is God's choice. This isn't Samuel's choice. It isn't Saul's choice. This is God's choice of Saul. And then chapter 10, he basically, verses 1 through 16, "Don't worry, you're going to find the donkeys." This is confirmation to Saul that Samuel was a prophet. Okay. "Then Samuel took a flask of oil, poured it on the head, and kissed him and said, 'Has not the Lord anointed you ruler over his inheritance?'" He's now picked Saul. And they're by themselves. You know, he's doing this. This is just between Saul and him. Nobody knows this yet. Okay? And they go out and they find the donkeys. Let's see. Where was I going to read? Let me read verses 6 through 9. "Then the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you mightily, and you shall prophesy with them and be changed into another man. And it shall be when those signs come to you, do for yourself what the occasion requires, for God is with you. And you shall go down before me in Gilgal. And behold, I will come down to you and offer burnt offerings and sacrifice peace offerings. You shall wait 7 days until I come to you and show you what you should do. Then it happened when he turned back to leave Samuel, God changed his heart, and all those signs came about on that day. Samuel gives him a command. He said, just wait here for 7 days. When you read further on, well, I don't want to get too far. You read further on, one of the downfalls of Saul was he couldn't wait. In this occasion, he waits. He does exactly what Samuel asks him to do. And Saul waited. And it says that God will now change your heart. Something happened here where Saul sees that Samuel is the man of God and that he is the one that God is choosing to be king of Israel. And then look at verse 15 and 16. And Saul's uncle said, tell me what Samuel said to you. So Saul said to his uncle, because they just found the donkeys, and it says, he told me plainly that the donkeys had been found. And then look at this. But he did not tell him about the matter of the kingdom which Samuel had mentioned. So Saul's uncle comes to him and said, what happened with the donkeys? And why, we went to Samuel told us where they'd be, and it happened just like he said. And then the writer says, but Saul did not tell him that he was going to be king. If you know what happened to Saul later, you're like, why didn't he just go, dude, and I'm going to be king? You know, he also said, I'm going to be king. But he doesn't. This is kind of the second sense that we look at Saul and we go, he had a humble heart. Why are you picking me, a Benjamite from Gibeah? And then his uncle says, what happened with the donkeys? Well, Saul told us, and it was true. I can't tell you the rest of the story. Then 17 through 27. Let me read these 10 verses. Thereafter, Samuel called the people together to the Lord at Mizpah. And he said to the sons of Israel, thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought Israel up from Egypt, and I delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the power of all the kingdoms that were oppressing you. But you today rejected your God, who delivered you from all of your calamities and your distresses. Yet you said, no, but set a king over us. Now therefore, present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and by your clans. Thus Samuel brought all the tribes of Israel near, and the tribe of Benjamin was taken by lot. So there, he gathers all the tribes. You got the 12 tribes, you know, all sitting by themselves, and they start drawing lots. Let's draw a lot. I mean, and see what tribe is it going to come from. And it says, and the tribe of Benjamin, and the lot was taken. Then he brought the tribe of Benjamin. So now we got Benjamin here. It's going to come from the tribe of Benjamin. And he brought that tribe near, verse 21, by its families. And the Matriite family was taken. And Saul, the son of Kish, was taken. So they're doing lots. Nobody knows. The uncle doesn't know. Only Samuel and Saul knows what happened, what's about to happen. But they're taking lots. And as the lots are going down, the family is chosen. And then Saul, out of that family, it says, and Saul, the son of Kish, was taken. But when they looked for him, he could not be found. Therefore, they inquired further of the Lord, has the man come here yet? So the Lord said, behold, he is hiding himself by the baggage. I mean, picture this tall, good-looking, you know, Saul. And he's in the back, hiding. I don't want this to be me.
this can't be true. He was humble enough to hide himself behind the luggage. I'm going to jump a little bit. You know, when God asks us to do something, is it ever scary? Most of the time it is. Most of the time. Would I love to hide sometimes behind the baggage? I got plenty of baggage. No, you know what? But the analogy is unbelievable. You know, Saul knew this was from God, and he's hiding. Oh, verse 23. So they ran and took him from there. And when he stood among the people, he was taller than any of the people from his shoulders upward. And Samuel said to all the people, "Do you see him whom the Lord has chosen? Surely there is no one like him among all the people." So all the people shouted and said, "Long live the king!" And Samuel told the people the ordinances of the kingdom and wrote them in the book and placed it before the Lord. And Samuel sent all the people away, each to his own house. And Saul went to his house in Gibeah. And the valiant men whose hearts God had touched went with him. And then there's kind of in a little interesting verse 27. But certain worthless men said, "How can this one deliver us?" And they despised him and did not bring him any present, but he kept silent. I can't think. We all like to be liked, you know. And even though Saul was this big, tall, good-looking, God's choice, humble, there are people that said, we don't like him. But Saul, kept silent. And then chapter 11 is Saul's first victory, and this is when he chops up the cattle and he sends them out into the nation of Israel, and they beat the Amorites. I think it's the Amorites. Read it. Yeah, they have a big battle against the Amorites. And now there's a bunch of little analogies in here, or typology. Turn to 11, verses 11 through 13. Let me read that. So there's this big victory. And it says, "And it happened the next morning that Saul put the people in three companies." They had 330,000 men came and signed up. And it says, and he put them in three companies, and they came into the midst of the camp in the morning watch and struck down the Amorites until the heat of the day. And it came about that those who survived were scattered so that no two of them were left together. Then the people said to Samuel, "Who is he that said, 'Shall Saul reign over us?' Bring the men that we may put them to death." But Saul said, "Not a man shall be put to death this day, for today the Lord has accomplished deliverance in Israel." When you look at Saul in the beginning, he's like, "This is God's doing. This wasn't me. I didn't accomplish this. This big, tall, good-looking leader that everyone, like, wow." Saul said, no, "Not a man shall be put to death this day, for the Lord has accomplished the deliverance in Israel." "This isn't me," Saul said. "This isn't me." Then Samuel said to the people, "Go and let us go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there." So all the people went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. They also offered sacrifices of peace offerings before the Lord, and there Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. And wait till you see what happens in chapter 12. But the beginning, it's like there was this humble start for Saul. Something happened. A verse came to mind when I was thinking about this. Romans chapter 12, and this is right after the beginning. I'll read the first several verses, but listen. I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a holy and living sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. That sounds like just what happened to Saul. God, it changed him into a new person. And he was humble, and he was from the smallest tribe and that had a bad reputation. But God turned him into a new man. Then, verse 3 says, For through the grace given to me, I say to every man among you, do not think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment, as God has allotted to each one a measure of faith. There's something we can learn from Saul, because what we're about to hear in the next few chapters is something went wrong. He might have started thinking more highly of himself than he ought to think. I mean, there was this change in him. He saw God use him and God pick him. And did he start thinking more highly of himself than he ought to? I think there's this whole kind of tension in life that, you know, God called us, died on the cross for us. When we put our faith in him, he changed, took us, adopted us as his, I'm going to turn this off, adopted us.